Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
You have to. I got to always make sure I get the R's in the right spot, James. I don't know about you, but today is Wednesday. It feels like next Monday. I don't know why ever since January 20th, weeks feel like months. Months feel like years. Days feel like, I don't know, their own special unit of time. But it feels much later than Wednesday to me, James.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, before we get to the news, I've got a little housekeeping I have to do. I think it was on Monday's episode I referenced that I used to go to the TKTS booth at the South Street Seaport. And I said, oh, it's obviously not there anymore. A couple eagle-eared listeners, Susan Green and Sam Gonzalez, realized that I was actually talking about the TKTS booth that used to be at the South Tower at the World Trade Center. That's why I said it's obviously not there anymore. The South Street Seaport is the TKTS booth that replaced the one at the World Trade Center. So thank you for catching that. And I apologize if I misled people or confused people as to which TKTS booths were actually still open. Also, Jim Thorpe, your truce is accepted. James, I can't tell if he thinks I was serious about being mad at him. I don't really even know if I was mad. I don't really understand, but I think he thinks I was mad.
No.
He was joking. Okay. Want to make sure, because I don't want people to think like I actually hate them. If I hate you, well, just look at my Twitter account. You can figure out who I dislike.
I had coffee with Jim Thorpe at BroadwayCon, and we spent an hour or so together and chatted about different parts of Broadway and theater and his life and my life and things like that. We had a great time, and we had a little voodoo doll with Matt Tamanini, and we stuck pins in it. So
that's why you can hear my throat's a little huskier this week than normal. I'm a little the
little Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, you know. I don't know if I've got Stevie Nicks, but yeah, a little bit. Finally, James, before we wrap up this episode, like we did yesterday, we're going to have another little mini Broadway Con conversation. This time, not with somebody that you guys probably know, like it was with the Broadwasted folks from yesterday, but this is a friend of ours, Melinda Sakella, who is a graphic designer. She's a listener. She's helping us with a redesign of our Broadway Radio website, which may or may not ever actually happen. Right, James?
Yes, may or may not ever happen in my lifetime. And if not, then you shall take the banner and see it through.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Anyway, so stick with us after the news for that. And you can hear she went to a couple really interesting panels. And it's always cool to see the perspective of somebody who's not necessarily in the theater community, but went to something like Broadway Con just as a fan.
All right, first up, Actors Fund in Mount Sinai to open a performing arts health center.
Yeah, this was something that was reported on Monday, James, and we didn't get to it yesterday, but this is really, really cool. Starting in March of 2017, the Actors Fund, along with Mount Sinai Doctors, is going to open a new health center for the performing arts and entertainment community in New York City. It's going to be conveniently located close to the Actors Fund headquarters in between 48th and 49th Street in Times Square. The Samuel J. Friedman Health Center for the Performing Arts will serve as the medical care provider that is solely focused on the particular health care needs of the entertainment and performing arts community. And it's operated in partnership with the Actors Fund in Mount Sinai. And it offers primary and specialty care and expedited referrals and all this other kind of stuff. This is a fantastic thing. And James, we've often talked about the Actors Fund and all the great things they do. It's very, very cool. So if you want to get more information about it, go to www.actorsfund.org/healthcenter. We'll, of course, have that link in the show notes at broadwayradio.com. The president of the Actors Fund, Brian Stokes Mitchell, has a nice little video kind of explaining it. And this is something, James, that is very important, you know, as we talk about things in the political world, and we won't get into that. But when healthcare is in question for a lot of people, and just because people are members of an actors union or some other type of union, that doesn't necessarily mean they always have healthcare. They have to keep up certain, you know, working quotas to be a part of that. So this is a really good thing and a really good service that the Actors Fund in Mount Sinai is doing.
Love the Actors Fund. Very, very important, integral part of the Broadway community. Many can't go on without the Actors Fund. So any way to support the ongoing efforts, and this is just one of the programs that they create to help actors reach their artistic goals.
Yeah.
So Ken Ludwig's A Comedy of Tenors begins performances tomorrow at Paper Mill. Isn't this a bit confusing, Ken Ludwig, with another tenor show?
Yeah, and I apologize for that. It's actually tonight because we're recording on the 31st. It actually starts on February 1st, so I apologize for that, James. Yes, this is actually the sequel to Ken Ludwig's renowned Tony Award-winning comedy, Lend Me a Tenor. This one is the sequel, and it begins performances tonight at the Paper Mill Playhouse in Millburn, New Jersey. It is scheduled to run through Sunday, February 26th. This is a sequel to that 1930s Paris show that everybody loves. It's madcap hijinks, comedy, slapstick, super funny. This production of A Comedy of Tenors stars Judy Blazer, John Tracy Egan, Donna English, David Joseph Berg, Michael Kostroff, Jill Pace, and Ryan Silverman, who I believe he had to leave the Melissa Errico show. I'm drawing a blank. At the Irish Rep.
At the Irish Rep. Finian's Rainbow.
He had to leave Finian's Rainbow when it extended to get ready to do this show. James, do you know if you're going to go see this one? If you're going to get invited to this one?
I have been invited. I didn't schedule it, so okay. Maybe I've missed my opportunity there.
Well, hopefully Peter or Michael go so we can get a report on this. But if you've ever seen Lend Me a Tenor, you know that it is hilarious when it's done well with great comic actors. I have to imagine that this sequel with a great cast is going to be just as hilarious. And you don't see very successful sequels in the theatrical community very often. We're so used to them in movies nowadays, where basically everything is either a reboot or a sequel or a prequel. So it's cool to see one might actually be really, really good. We don't see it very often. So I'm excited to hear what the reviews are like. And if Peter and Michael get to go, I'm sure you guys will talk about it on This Week on Broadway at some point.
Did you say something about Paris?
I'm sorry. This one is set in Paris. It's
because the other one is set in Cleveland or something.
Yes, it's in Cleveland, Cleveland, Ohio. That's from a different show. But it's 1930s Paris, and the stage is set for the Concert of the Century. So that's the breakdown of this one. I'm sorry if I was confusing the two. But yeah, it's should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Lend Me a Tenor. I really love that play, and so I hope that Ken Ludwig is very talented and very
so
funny,
funny.
So funny. So I expect nothing but the best from him. Next up, theatrical TV news.
Yeah, we've got a couple things that I wanted to hit on. First, as I mentioned the other day, there is a big sporting event that is also a very big TV event that's happening this Sunday. However, if you don't care about the Super Bowl other than seeing the Skylar sisters perform America the Beautiful, our friends over at Broadway HD have a fantastic deal going on that I wanted to let you know. If you sign up for their monthly service between now and the game kicking off, that's the start of the game. Kicking off is the start of the game. On Sunday, you can get your first month for just 51 cents, which is in honor of the fact that this is Super Bowl 51. So they are calling it their 3-hour halftime show. The halftime will not be that long for real. But if you want to watch one of the great shows that they have on Broadway HD, whether it's She Loves Me or Romeo and Juliet or any of the other great things, they've got a Cyrano in there that's really good. So if you want to check those things out, we'll have the link to Broadway HD. It's just BroadwayHD.com, but a really good deal to get in on that really special service.
And Pasek and Paul and Rachel Bloom pen songs for Supergirl, The Flash, and a musical crossover.
Yeah, I've talked about this before when I think last week when they announced that Darren Criss was going to be the special villain of the week for the Supergirl Flash musical crossover coming up in March. Yesterday it was announced that both Benj Pasek and Justin Paul together had written a song for the Supergirl Flash. It's like a two-part episode. The Flash star Grant Gustin is going to be performing their original song Running Home to You, and that is going to be in the Flash episode that airs on Tuesday, March 21st. Rachel Bloom, the writer, creator, star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, has also co-written a song with Tom Root entitled Super Friends, which is awesome because that's, you know, for many superhero fans, that's the name of a classic cartoon that a lot of people know. That one, I believe I saw on Twitter, is going to be sung by The Flash, Grant Gustin, and Supergirl herself, Melissa Benoist. If you are not a superhero TV fan, I would still highly encourage you to watch this because the people who are going to be singing in this episode are fantastic. Melissa Benoist, we know from Glee. Grant Gustin was also on Glee, but he also was in the last national tour of West Side Story. Jesse L. Martin singing, Jeremy Jordan singing, Victor Garber singing, John Barrowman is singing. And there's a few others that I can't think of off the top of my head, but it's a great group of folks, and I'm really, really looking forward to that.
That almost moves into our recommendation section, doesn't it?
It does. I have a ton of not a ton. I've got three things that I wanted to recommend because I was just kind of in a video watching rabbit hole after work today, and the first one involves La La Land. From which, you know, obviously is getting basketball quite a bit of mainstream publicity here. The first is from Laura Ostis's Broadway Princess Party, where the ever fantastic Broadway princess herself does a mashup of La La Land's audition song and Disney's a song from Disney's Cinderella. We're so used to her singing songs from Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. It's a great mashup. Then the next video I want to recommend is the video and interviews from the press availability for Encore's Big River that's coming up. There's some great stuff. I'm going to throw in the video from my colleague Richard Ridge, but the performances are from Nicholas Barish, Kyle Scatliff, and Lauren Worsham. I have never seen this show, but I love that song Muddy Water, and to hear Nicholas Barish and Kyle Scatliff sing that song at the beginning and at the end of Richie's segment is really fantastic. And then finally, back to the Broadway Princess Party, Jackie Burns performs an Adele Dazeem medley. Of course, Jackie Burns was, I don't know if she was the alternate or the standby or the understudy for Idina Menzel and If Then, but she did eventually replace her in the show. She also is a former Elphaba, both on the road and on Broadway. So she sings songs from If Then. She sings songs from Wicked. She also sings Let It Go, and there's some other things written in there. And I don't know that I've ever seen – I've seen Jackie Burns in videos, but I've never seen her perform, or maybe not with this much, but she is hilarious in this. So definitely, definitely check that one out. I've always known who Jackie Burns is, but now I'm a committed fan as well.
Wow. So that's exciting stuff. When you get to the office on Wednesday morning, fire up those three videos and get your morning started off correctly. So just a reminder that we're going to talk to Melinda Sakella right after this. But Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Something Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending some of your Wednesday with us, and we'll be back and talk with you tomorrow. With us, we have a special guest. Melinda Sakella is with us. Melinda is an art director at a creative agency in New York, and she's also a Broadway Radio listener. And she and I have been chatting back and forth, and she's actually helped us with the new redesign of the Broadway Radio website, which eventually will come before I die.
And maybe.
Yeah, well, you know, you'll have to carry it on if not, Matt. So, Melinda, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you were at BroadwayCon this weekend, and you saw a number of sessions, but let's talk about three of your favorite sessions here. You went to this Reimagining Revivals. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was a really interesting panel. The kind of things that they talked about were how to bring back a show and make it say something new. and different ways they could do that. And what I found really interesting about this panel in particular is they brought like a really wide range of people to speak on the panel. So they had Ted Chapin, who's the president of president of Rodgers and Hammerstein. So he was kind of speaking more from the person who owns the musical property that's being revived. And then they had Sammy Canold, who is a associate director. She worked on Great Comet. She was the one who did Ragtime on Ellis Island. And so she talked kind of about site-specific revivals and how you can use sites to kind of reimagine revivals. They had Al Silber on the panel from Fiddler on the Roof, and she kind of gives the actor's perspective. They also had Daniel Goldstein and Simon Kenny. And Simon is a London-based set designer. He worked on the Sweeney Todd in the Pie Shop. So it was just really interesting to hear kind of five really different points of view from all talking about one topic. Kind of really inspiring to hear the reasons that they wanted to bring back the shows that they did and kind of what their role was in the process.
Melinda, as a – oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that we've had nearly all of those people on Broadway Radio to talk about their work in one way or the other. And something that is interesting to me is that there's a wide age range in there. Sammy Kenold is very young, and Ted Chapin is, you know – well, he's been around a long time.
Don't go there, James. Why you gotta put Ted on blast? That's not cool, man.
I'm just saying that he's a man of great experience, and so that must have been a very interesting part of that. You know, Sammy Kenold doing a production of Violet on a bus.
Oh yeah, about that. That's so fascinating, and I never would have. That and it seems like it's going to work out so well. They're doing it up at ARC. Yeah,
that's something she's done before, I think, as well. But Melinda, I'm interested from your perspective as somebody who works in design, granted not theatrical design, but someone who works in design on a daily basis. What were you able to gain anything that applied to what you do in your day job from what they were talking about and how they approach something that's fairly well known from a different perspective?
Yeah, I think something that kind of came through over and over on every panel that I went to was I could really connect to the creative process and kind of where people gather inspiration. And I think one thing that I like to do as a designer is I'm really focused on the narrative and what kind of story we're trying to tell through the design, whether it's a brand or a website or an exhibit. Those are the things that I work on usually. Mm-hmm. But so I was able to kind of connect that aspect of it to how they talk about where do you start when you want to tell a story and how can you look for bits and pieces of inspiration to make it new and make it interesting and tell the story from a new point of view, a new perspective. So it was really the idea of like this narrative form that was inspiring to me and that I connected with as a designer, a visual designer.
One of the seminars that you went to was designing for Circle in the Square. So tell us about that, you know, being very specific to a Broadway theater.
So they had Beowulf Borrett, who did the Spelling Bee. And they had David Korins, who talked about doing Godspell at Circle in the Square. And they also had Derek McLean. And so just like hearing those three designers speak about kind of the intricacies of working with this very particular space. And it was really interesting because as a audience member, you kind of see everything as a cohesive whole. And they like were able to kind of pick out specific things that kind of were challenging for them by working in Circle in the Square. So they talked about how when you're looking, when you're viewing something in a proscenium theater, you're looking at everything kind of on a flat plane as the audience. But when you're at Circle in the Square, the floor is a really big, like kind of canvas that you can work on. And the audience across from you is a part of the story space as well. So they talked about kind of like dealing with these extra levels to the playing field that you don't normally have. And they talked about kind of technical things, like how do you bring scenery in and out when there's nowhere to hide it? what do you do with the band? Like do you put the band in the audience, and how does that affect the audience's perception of the sound? There was just a lot of really interesting, like, technical kind of stories about, you know, like, challenges that they faced and how they overcame them, and how the shows that they came up with are different than they would have been if they were done in a regular proscenium theater. So it was just, like, really fascinating to see kind of the challenges that that space presents, but the, like, beautiful things that came out of it.
Have you, did anybody talk about, or have you thought about how design has changed so much in the last 10, 15 years because of the technology, and just how the use of video and lasers and other types of light things that can dress a stage instantaneously has changed the way that we see theater?
Yeah, and I actually went to another panel that was all about projection design, and they had the projection designer from Dear Evan Hansen on that panel. Oh, really interesting. They kind of, the way they described it was that, like, projection design is, like, in its kind of angsty teenage years, its awkward teenage years. Like, they've started to figure out how to use it properly, and they're starting to do cool things with it, but it's still, like, very young. And, like, there's still, like, a million different directions you can take it. And they actually talked about how, like, you know, back in the day when lighting a stage was a new and exciting thing, how crazy lighting design was back then. And now it's just a seamless part of a production. So I thought that was really
good point. Yeah. And then you also went to adapting musical properties. So tell us about that.
Yeah, that one was really interesting, too. It was, like, a different group of people than you're used to, like, hearing from. It was a lot of people from organizations or companies that own properties. So there was Isaiah Robert Hurwitz, who is the VP of creative affairs for Fox Stage Productions. There was Chris Hertzberger, who is the VP of live theatricals at Universal. And then there was a couple people there from the Araka group, Michael Barra and Jen Becker. Yep. And so that was really interesting because they talked a lot about, like, how do you choose something to be brought to the stage? Like, how do you know that a good book or movie will necessarily translate? And they talked a lot about, like, how do you service the fans of these properties? Like, when you're working with an existing property that's well-known and well-liked, you don't want to ruin it or make it worse. You want to bring something new and fresh and add to it, but not make it too hard for people who don't know the property to understand it. So that was really interesting to see it kind of the early stages of a production being made, like where you get your initial idea.
So, I mean, Isaac Robert Hurwitz used to be the executive director of the New York Nymph. He used to be head of Nymph. And then he's gone from Nymph, where they have no budgets and make everything work under the sun, to Fox, where they have tremendous budgets and he can kind of do everything. So that must have been very insightful, the things that he had to say about the development of properties, because I'm sure that at one point or another during his Nymph career, he must have had a run-in with the legal team at Fox, and now he's on the legal team at Fox. So that must be very, very good. Well, is this the first time you've been to Broadway Con? Were you there last year?
No, this was the first time.
This was your first time, and you're a New Yorker now?
Yeah, yeah.
So this was what was your take on this? Did this meet your expectations? What, or was it you just kind of went in not knowing anything about it, or?
I feel like I went in with some, like, preconceived notions of, like, what a convention is like, and I feel like it definitely, like, kind of exceeded my expectations in a lot of ways. Like, it was just, like, such a warm, welcoming place to be, and everyone seemed like they were having such a great time. And I went for, like, the more academic reasons, because I was drawn to, like, kind of the production design panels and stuff, and so I wanted to kind of focus on that. And I felt like there was kind of something for everyone. Like, if you wanted to go and be in more of these like academic discussions, you could do that. If you wanted to meet actors, you could do that. So I overall was like very impressed by like how smoothly everything went and how just like excited and happy to be there every single person was, like guests and panelists, and everyone just seemed to really be enjoying themselves. So I liked it. I'll probably go back again.
All right. So Melinda, thank you so much for joining us on Broadway Radio to tell us about BroadwayCon. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, no problem.